Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. This abbreviated program today. Auburn basketball coming up at 11. So we got a jam-packed 2 hours for you, loaded with guests. Coming up here in about 30 minutes, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, joining us a little early, accommodating us also on the program, Congressman Robert Aderholt. That's at the 10 o'clock hour, and we will wrap it all up with new colleague at 1819 News, Ray Mellick, will join us. That's at the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour, so you want to stick around for that. The text number, 251-343-0106, if you want to respond to anything we are discussing this morning. We're broadcasting in Birmingham, so as these things go, just bear with us, but always grateful to my friends at the Alabama Policy Institute and 1819 News for hosting me. Let's kick it off here. Joining us now on the program, she's running for governor in Alabama, but she's also under President Trump, the ambassador to Slovenia. Lindy Blanchard's on the line with us. Ambassador, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for taking the time up. Before we start talking about what's going on stateside, let's look across the sea there. The Ukraine situation, Russia, not a big surprise here, but Russia's slowly making its way. I think it's coming at a big, big, big price for them. But what you heard from Zelensky yesterday and everything else you've heard, what's your take on what's going on there?
Well, 100%, there's a lot of movement with Russia because we have a weak president. Thank goodness under President Trump, all the NATO ambassadors, and by the way, Slovenia was a NATO partner, we were told to get these NATO partners to bump up their 2% pledge. And since that was a focus, today they're more prepared than ever for what's going on in Europe. They have more money, hence more personnel and more defense hardware. You see, Poland is pushing out some of their defense hardware that one of my friends, Ambassador Mosbacher, was very deliberate in getting those in that area for Poland. And it's exciting to see our work that it has brought fruit. My prime minister that I worked with in Slovenia actually went 3 days ago, was one of the prime ministers that went to the Ukraine and met with Zelensky. So having a proactive NATO and proactive partners like prime ministers that the NATO ambassadors got to work with one-on-one is exciting to see those partnerships working to help secure the Ukraine against Russia. It's great to see.
Well, and what do you make of this situation, the big swap, the Biden administration not exactly handling this satisfactorily to a lot of people's chagrin, I think. But that a lot of this seems like this should have been thought out long, long ago. And here we are today, kind of, almost Monday morning quarterbacking it.
We are definitely working on the defense and certainly not proactive. If we had been a strong, proactive U.S. Partner in Afghanistan doing that evacuation correctly, we wouldn't be looking at this. I can tell you all ambassadors are taught the opposite on how to evacuate, so that certainly was not done in a strong and strong way, and certainly not a way that we were taught in our school. We all go to school for 5 weeks and we're taught the same thing, whether you're political or career. So it was not done in a correct fashion.
Joined by a former U.S. Ambassador to Slovenia, Lindy Blanchard. She's also running for governor here in Alabama. Let's kick it. Let's talk a little bit about the campaign. How is the campaign going? How are things going? We're getting what, just about 2 months away from primary day.
I know it. I saw your article with 1819, and certainly we all see polling coming out right now, but the polling we have to remember is the same polling that predicted Tuberville to lose, and it's done by establishment, huge entities that are trying to push their candidates because they're paid pocket policy candidates that are working with these big entities that get their support. So I'm excited about the normal polling. We'll be doing our own polling the end of this month or the first of next month, and that it will be realistic polling and not this push poll, weighted poll that's done by the establishment. So, and all across the state, hearing the same message, why isn't the governor helping us? We're, you know, having hard times on just trying to figure out if we can fill up our gas tank or go to the grocery store and fill up our buggy. And that's what I hear all across the state. And as governor, I feel like she should have, and I certainly will, pull back on this gas tax. It was done in an incorrect way, so I'll freeze it and roll it back. And then getting relief to the hardworking families of Alabama with a grocery tax, getting rid of that grocery tax, and getting rid of things like, I was just with someone that said they just paid their business privilege tax, and how expensive that was. And, you know, things like that that we can help as leaders in this state, but you can only make those decisions if you're not paid for by big entities and having to do what they want you to do. So that's why I'm the outsider running in this race and willing to be the voice of the people and not the PACs and the big party entities that want to pay their way into decision making. So that's what I'm all out and about the state. I can tell you, on Saturday I started in Fort Payne, Alabama last Saturday, and I ended up in Grand Bay. So I'm all over the state and I love it.
It's one quarter to the next. Ambassador, one of the things we were talking about during the break there, Governor Ivey's appointments to the bench, you wanted to address. Kind of walk us through, what do you take issue with, and what should we be on the lookout for?
Well, we're researching her appointments, and first we started with judges. She's so far that we have found, and we've been told there's more, but we want to have names and dates before we say anything. Other than we have found 8 Democrats that she's appointed to the judgeship. And we all know how important it is to have our judges conservative. So that's very concerning when you have a so-called Republican governor appointing Democrats for judges. And there are other things that we'll be highlighting. And certainly the governor has been out and about touting that she didn't shut down this state her last few speeches, and that she didn't close churches. And it's as a candidate running against the governor, the fact that she's saying that just drops my jaw, because we all know what happened during COVID, and we are still trying to get out of that gully that most of Alabama ended up with post-COVID and during COVID. So anyway, I just love talking about the people that I'm meeting all over the state and hearing what the people are focused on. And certainly it's things like that she's, you know, not pouring up for what she did in the past with the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, and certainly now saying that she didn't even shut the state down. So I'll be that governor that is a no COVID mandate candidate that worked in a country that was former socialist, and we don't want to get near the fringes of socialism because I lived in it.
Ambassador, one of the things that's really taken off in this campaign cycle is, well, I mean, it's probably because the legislature's in session. We're talking a lot about education and you know, standards, Common Core standards, accountability. Walk us through a sort of a synopsis of what you see needs to be done. You know, you hear that you've heard the talking point, 52nd out of 50 among public schools in the country. Yeah. What do we need to do to get on the right track there?
Well, it's easy to mimic states that have already made the pathway, like Florida. They got rid of Common Core, and they gave 52% of their school system the opportunity for school choice. And Florida went from 27 to 3. And so, number one, as governor, I'll rip the rug out from Common Core, whatever name they're calling it now, because they're saying we don't have Common Core in this state. We all know that our students are still being taught Common Core math. I have 3 in public school right now. And whatever they call it, whether it's Common Core or some other entity, it's still an obscure way of teaching math and other subjects. And then we're seeing them, the governor saying that she has banned CRT. Well, you know, when you ban something, you need to have consequences behind banning. And that's still going on in our schools. You know, in Birmingham, there's a group of parents that are very focused on seeing what their students are being taught. They actually spoke last year at API on what they have found, what their progress, and we need to partner with parents like that are on the ground and getting involved in what our students are being taught, our children, and certainly how they're trying to brainwash our children. And I'll be that governor that protects the children of this state against brainwashing that's ridiculous, like CRT and SEL, anything that they're trying to name it, but it creates diversity and hate.
So you think there's a indoctrination effort underway in public schools in Alabama?
100%. They're trying to brainwash our children and indoctrinating them into things that we weren't raised on. And they're even hiring teachers to teach teachers on how to do it. And that's a waste of money. We see that $92 million has been brought up for in our legislators to push the bill forward of teachers teaching teachers how to teach Common Core math, and much less the brainwashing of we are trying to have our children not taught, especially my children, I have a very diverse family, not taught hate and not taught that one race is the oppressor and one being oppressed. You know, I have a very diverse family, and I would hate for one of my girls to come home and say they're being oppressed by one of their sisters. And we need to be sure that's not being taught in school.
Ambassador, we're out of time, but folks want to find out more about your campaign or get in touch or anything on social media, tell where they can look.
BlanchardForGovernor.com, and certainly look up our Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And please reach out for questions, because I want to be the governor of solutions and tell you my solutions for any of the numbers that are coming out, and certainly working against brainwashing our children and indoctrinating our children into something we don't believe in as a conservative state. So thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time. Former U.S. Ambassador Savita Lindy Blanchard running for governor there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Hello, Kansas. Sweet Bill Farmer, let me thank you for your time. You are the 40-hour week for living. Just to send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia.
your coal miner, let me thank you for your
welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5, 24 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. We've made it all the way to Friday. Like I said, abbreviated program today, Auburn basketball NCAA tournament coming up at 11. One of those, they just happen to be back-to-back weeks. SEC tournament last week, and then obviously this week NCAA tournament. But when there's abbreviated programs, happens every now and then because of Auburn athletics. So that is coming up at 11. You want to stay tuned for that. Still to come on this program. Lots to come on this program, guys. State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, in the next segment. 10 o'clock hour, we got Congressman Robert Adderholt from the 4th Congressional District. And we'll wrap it all up with my colleague here at 1819 News, Editor-in-Chief Ray Mellick will be in studio here. I am broadcasting from Birmingham today, if I sound a little different, but that is why. Rainy here, just like it is there, but I hear it's rainy everywhere all over Alabama. 251-343-0106. Mixter. She called the grocery cart a buggy. That would make her a top choice in my book, referring to Ambassador Blanchard. Former ambassador or not, this woman, Jace, that's not nice. Let's see here. Unnamed texter asked, what does CRT teach? Well, everybody's got a whole definition of critical race theory, unnamed texter. I guess to simplify, I don't know if you're asking this honestly or just kind of trolling the program here, but that there is we have to look at, well, it's in the name, it's critical race theory, so you have to look at race critically, and that being that there is racism or there are elements of racism in everyday life that we do not acknowledge, and we must therefore acknowledge them, or we will never overcome the issue of racism in this country. And I think what it boils down to is people say, well, you're suggesting that everything is inherently racist. And that is not a starting point that we need to be teaching in our public schools, is the belief. So you see the efforts to reject this. It's a theory. And look, it's not being taught in public school curriculum per se, but where I think the divisive concepts construct is trying to keep away. You have these all over the country. Yeah, these left wing storefronts that are trying to make a buck, and they're trying to capitalize at this politically vulnerable time of Black Lives Matter, and there are issues we must overcome as a country, as a society still. And you don't need a bunch of white school administrators trying to teach diversity and these concepts. So what they do is they say, well, we'll tell you what, you pay us a little bit. We, the experts, will come in and we will get your mind right. It's like the Southern Poverty Law Center, ACLU, I guess, the Anti-Defamation League. These left-wing groups will charge a school system, because this is what they did in Mountain Brook and Huntsville, will come in and they will give a seminar to your children about racism and what they need to do to be better people at the cost of taxpayers. But without much discussion, and what they do is they're clever about it. They operate under a veil of secrecy as if it's a non-disclosure thing, anti-competitive thing. They don't want some other left-wing storefront stealing their trade secrets, so they hide behind this cloak of a non-disclosure. You don't know what your kids are being taught by these groups beforehand, and here we are. The legislature's forced act to say, no, we're not going to do that, at least not with public money. That's why a lot of parents and a lot of lawmakers, policymakers, want to do something here. Jace, back at it here. There are not multiple definitions. It's rather specific. And teaching that whites are evil suppressors is not. It has its place in college course. It's a bit heavy for 12-year-olds. Jace, there are multiple definitions. There's a the way it's being used is kind of a general common noun, and then there's like the proper noun, critical race theory. So just to clear that up. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
And no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.
They begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing.
We fired our guns and the British kept a coming.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning, 34 minutes after the hour. So to come on the program in about a half hour, Congressman Robert Aderholt from the 4th Congressional District, north-ish Alabama, just north of Birmingham, between Birmingham and Huntsville. That's his district. Coleman, Gadsden, parts of the Shoals, Haleyville is where he hails from. He'll be with us at the top 10 o'clock hour. And then my colleague at 1819 News, Ray Mellick, will be with us, editor of 1819 News. So you'll want to stick around for that. Joining us now after taking a week off last week, or reunited here, if we will, but our returning champion, time-adjusted returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott on the line here. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to be out of Montgomery and back in the district.
I hear you there. I'll start here. Got a couple of competing gambling proposals. Your colleague Greg Albritton got the whole enchilada there. But one that's kind of interesting that's caught my attention, I think most people's attention. Chip Brown from across the bay has a lottery, a simple lottery bill. Your reaction to how these the movement here on gambling, this late stage of this legislative session?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with really, frankly, both proposals. It is late in the session to move legislation like this. I think both Senator Albritton and Representative Brown were trying to find out what their respective bodies would be interested in taking up. And it'll be curious to see what happens with that. I will tell you, we kept hearing, the Senate kept hearing out of the House that there was no interest in lottery, there was no interest in gaming at all, and that they would not be taking that up. And then lo and behold, you had this bill dropped, and then it kind of shoots out of committee on Wednesday. So that's an interesting development. Now there's a big difference between getting it out of committee and getting it on the floor, and then getting it on the floor and getting it passed. If Representative Brown is able to get it passed in the House, then I think we've got something to talk about. But until that happens, I'm not sure that we do. And frankly, I'd say the same thing for Senator Albritton. If he's able to get it on the floor and able to get it passed, then there's something to talk about. They are very different pieces of legislation and address two different concerns and will have to be reconciled. But that's really only if the respective bodies have the appetite to take either one of them up.
Well, tell me what you think here. Which is the right approach? Do you go after the lottery first and then address everything later, or do you try to do it all together? Some would argue that the lottery discussion is just being used as a vehicle for gaming interest, but then others, they're all tied, and you got to do it all together. What do you think is the correct approach?
Well, there's two different trains of thought there. One is, what do I want? What I'm interested in is a lottery that may allow the Porch Creek to do, some class three if they want to. And they're a separate nation. They do what they do, but I'm more interested in the lottery of Alabama. That seems to be what my constituents are really interested in. The problem is, the more pragmatic approach is that you have all of this existing gaming that is unregulated, untaxed, and really the Wild West. And we don't have a gaming commission that regulates this. We have these little constitutional amendments that allow it. It is corrupt in a lot of places. And it's something that, that really we as a state need to get a handle on. And I think Senator Albritton's trying to do that with his legislation. I also think that you have to deal with the existing businesses that are out there that are doing this under constitutional amendments in order to facilitate passage of anything in both chambers. It's just a political reality that I think we're going to have to deal with. So there's what I'd like, and then I think there's what is pragmatic and practical, and that is you got to deal with what's out there now. And that's where I think Senator Albright is probably more pragmatic. The problem is nobody seems to want to do it.
Senator, Numeracy Act, get your take on this. You've probably heard it from both sides right now that this it is a companion bill to the Literacy Act, just that it bolsters spending and gets coaches and it tries to get those NAEP scores up from where they are. However, there are some critics of it saying it's a backdoor mechanism to Common Core math. What is your take on the Orr bill?
I think there's some folks seeing boogeymen out there as far as the Common Core goes. The problem with talking about scores and NAEP scores and where we rate is that at some point you've got to evaluate our children on some sort of standard. Well, then you say standard and people go, well, that's Common Core. Well, no, it's not. It's just a, can you do math? And I hate that we've gotten to this point where we can't have a conversation about, yes, there is a standard. You have to evaluate children on whether or not they can do math or they can read. And no, that does not mean Common Core. I am not a Common Core fan. I am darn sure not a Common Core math fan. I've had to do it with my kids, and it's not pretty. They learned more French from me than they did math when we were doing it together. So I think at the end of the day, we got to quit seeing boogeymen when we start talking about evaluations. Every type of standard does not equate to Common Core. And I think Senator Orr's approach, providing the funding out of the ETF to truly bolster the needs of kids that are falling behind, is very much the right approach. We're doing that with the Literacy Act. That's more of a carrot and stick approach. You will achieve this level or you will not matriculate. The Numeracy Act is much more carrot. Let's see if we can help you along with some stick. When we start talking about, there'll be repercussions for school boards and school systems if they consistently continue to fail.
It doesn't have the mechanism that like the Literacy Act does, where you have to, or at least not yet, or will it, or does it, where if you can't add or subtract at a certain grade level, then you aren't promoted to the next grade.
It is not, and that's you know, kind of the laboratory of democracy that we're working in right now, and that is these are two different methods of accountability. One is accountability, in my mind, on the parent and the child, which I think is appropriate, and that is to say, if you cannot read at this level, then we will not continue to advance you in the grades. I don't necessarily think that's a bad approach. The Numeracy Act takes a very different approach and says, we're going to provide you with the funding we need. We're going to provide you with the intervention that you need. We're going to work hard to make sure you have every tool that you need in order to succeed. And then eventually, if you are not succeeding, if you are systemically failing to educate the children and so that they can perform at this level, you know, right, to some standards, to some evaluation, then we are going to take you over and we are going to run your school system. And again, that's putting accountability in two different places. You know, one, and the reading, again, on parents and kids to make sure that happens. And then two, on the school system and the education bureaucrats. And again, I think that both of those could be effective. This is not a bad way to look at both of those different options and see which one is more effective as we do everything we can to improve education in Alabama.
That on the Numeracy Act, a $92 billion price tag. Walk us through that. Is that a one-time upfront, or what is the what is it? An annual cost? Can you tell us a little bit about what the price tag on this would be?
It's going to be hard to do that, Jeff, without getting into it and seeing which schools and students take advantage of the tutors and how much is actually, there's allocated and then there's spent, if you will, right? There's appropriated and then there's actually spent. And I think what we're going to have to do before we get too serious about talking about cost is figuring out how much is actually used as opposed to just appropriated.
joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Divisive concepts. How do you feel about that legislation? Obviously, it doesn't mention critical race theory, but it's been talked about a whole lot. It seems broad, but maybe necessarily broad.
It is necessarily broad. It was in government affairs, which I chaired, was able to move through. I expect that the House version will come back to that same committee and we'll deal with it again. I expect it to pass. I'm supportive of the legislation. Look, we have got to stop teaching certain kids that they are disadvantaged, that they were wronged, and that's the reason so many things are, you know, hard. And we got to stop teaching other kids that they were, you know, bad people, and they may be bad people, and that's why, you know, that's why they should feel bad about themselves. We need to move on from all of that. We are all Alabamians. We are equal. We work and live and play together and learn together. And I think that's a good thing and a positive thing. History is history, and I don't think there's anybody that says we shouldn't teach our history. Whether that's good history or bad history, history that somebody may be proud of or history that somebody may be ashamed of. But we need to stay away, in my opinion, from treating children differently and teaching kids that they are different. Right now, let's realize that we're starting out in Alabama oftentimes on an equal playing field, and that everybody has an equal opportunity to learn and advance and succeed.
Senator, we were joined earlier this week by your sweet mate, Garland Gudger, on the program. He has a he and Senator Wagner of Vestavia Hills have a – they say it's not a wake surfing ban, but it I guess regulates – wake surfing on our Alabama's waters. I think the lieutenant governor is very, very, very much against this. But you're kind of I think this is right up in your wheelhouse here with these activities that take place on water. What do you make of this? What do you think it is? Can you walk us through it a little bit?
Well, Representative Jenny Shaver has had a piece of legislation for a couple of different years here, and I think she's introduced it again this year, that deals really with wakes in general and their effects on shorelines and piers and how close. And I think Senator Gudger's done a good job here really necking down what the issue is, and that is boats and activities that are, by their very design, meant to create a huge wake. Okay, that's not just that it's a byproduct of the boat going by, but rather these are slow-moving boats that have wakes in the stern that are designed to create a large enough wake for you to surf on, as opposed to skiing or even wakeboarding, but actually just surf on the wake. It is so large. And those activities, I think, disproportionately affect and can damage shorelines, whether that's shoreline erosion or piers and activities like that. What Senator Gudger and Senator Wagner have done is, I think, probably hit a sweet spot where they're addressing that particular activity, restricting it close to shore where it could do the most damage. Again, it's not a ban by any stretch, but it's addressing a specific concern without making it so broad that it ends up catching folks that are just out there, you know, riding around in their boat in a normal activity.
Is it, you know, is it, I guess there's nothing really on the books right now for the state, even if it's just, you're just not necessarily looking at it from the damage to property standpoint, but from a public safety standpoint and any threats that can pose, not just to the wake surfers, but maybe other nearby people or nearby craft.
Yeah, there's nothing really aside from no wake zones that deals with this. But again, they've done a good job, you know, really segmenting out a subsection of boats that are intentionally causing large wakes. And I think, you know, again, without catching folks that are just going about their normal course of business, you know, they're headed out to go fishing or something like that. It's these folks that are going back and forth and back and forth in front of your house or in front of the shoreline there and creating these massive wakes on purpose without so much regard for what they're doing. Still allows it, again, out, you know, away from shore. But I think really is taken into account the public safety side of it, the environmental side of it, the property, private property damage side of it, again, without casting too broad a net.
Finally, Senator, we'll get you out of here on this. The discussion about a potential gas tax holiday, a very small component of the overall price of gas at the pump, but it is out there. Some other states are trying it. My understanding is it would be very difficult for Alabama to do it just because you already have some of this money allocated, and then there's federal matching components that would suffer as well. But do you see that gaining any traction in the coming, the coming days?
I do not. It's very reactionary. It sounds good, you know, politically to argue for something like that. But realistically, it would not move the needle very much for the public. The current gas prices are results of poor energy policy, the Biden administration, everything from restricting exploration in the Gulf of Mexico to pipeline restrictions and other things. It's poor federal policy that's driving this. The practicality of rolling back a revenue source that's been encumbered, borrowed against, et cetera, for road projects that are ongoing right now is just unrealistic to make something like that happen. It would be very irresponsible to do so. And again, I think we'd see very little influence at the pumps. We are seeing gas prices fluctuating right now, 10 cents up and down, you know, every week or every day, maybe. And I don't think that the public would see a meaningful difference, especially when you have the disastrous energy policies of the Biden administration that are really negatively impacting the gas prices.
Senator, we'll leave it there, but you're always kind to come on, and we will do this all over again next week.
Thanks for having me on, and y'all have a great weekend.
And enjoy your spring break, by the way.
We will do so. Although I'd rather just run right through the tape, but we'll take a week off and work our wounds and get back to it.
Thanks again. State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Let's get a break. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Bit after that, we'll hear from 1819 News Editor-in-Chief Ray Bellick. That's coming up in the next hour. No 11 o'clock hour today. War Eagle, Auburn basketball, facing Jacksonville State, the Gamecocks. A little interstate battle there. Let's go to the text. 251-340-1106, by the way, is the text line. Damn Yankee. FYI, critical race theory is a college course taught at most major law schools. You know, my wife went to law school and graduated just a couple of years ago, and was it not taught the critical race theory? However, there's a lot of people that want to tell me that it is taught law school. I guess we have a lot of lawyers or law school graduates, I should say, out there. So in America, someone got some of this theory to high school teachers, aka Democrats. The college course focuses on the theory that race can be found in just about everything, just as you said. There's no place in high school, especially in English, math, or science. I mean, I don't disagree with that, damn Yankee, but I don't know if it's as widespread as people think it is. The 1619 Project and things like that have made it to where these legislatures got to take action, because that is the 1619 Project is being taught in schools, and that the real founding of the country was 1619, not 1776, and it was done on the backs of slaves, and therefore we're a inherently racist country. And that's where people, that's where these legislative bodies around the country are taking issue with that approach to history. And that, you know, that is why you're seeing these bans. And I don't blame them. I mean, I don't think that that is a radical departure from what we traditionally taught in America. Unnamed texter, in third grade, we were taught Alabama history and American history in fourth grade. What are the left-wing kooks trying to change about the history books? We had black kids in our class that learned the same thing and did not have a problem with history. It's the politics, right? All of it boils down to politics. Gary, 5-cent grocery tax generates $500 million for education. Lottery since 1999. Are you kidding me? Okay, we're in the Bible Belt. So are the states that have approved the lotto, surrounding states. Okay, one, take all those states that approved the lotto. Take the bills and copy and paste to the Alabama bills. Education in the bill, voila, approval. No, it's not that easy, Gary. Gary, there are other gambling interests in Alabama that don't make it that easy. We missed when Alabama did not vote, or when they voted against that lottery bill in 1999, it sent in motion a bunch of other things. And that's what we had to pay for, the sins of the past, if you will. And that's why we don't have a solution to this right away. Got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
We're told I do need your prayers is true. Save a few.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. We're waiting Congressman Robert Adderholt to join us. Caught up with some constituents, I am told, and will be with us any moment now. So, just bear with us. We will join him as soon as we can. In the meantime, let's get to some text messages. 251-343-0106. If you want to weigh in on anything, by the way, Chris in Saraland says wakeboard boats are extremely destructive to shoreline property and are dangerous to other boaters. Very interesting issue there, Chris. But anyway, it looks like we got our next guest coming up here. Let's see. Congressman, good morning. Jeff Poor here. How are you? Oh, do we have him? Congressman, good morning. Jeff Poor here. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, you there?
We are. Can you hear me?
Hey, he is on his way in. He got held up.
Okay, I'm on air, so sorry about that. Anyway, I guess we will patiently await, such as live radio here. Anyway, back to the wakeboard boat discussion. There is some strong emotions about it either way. And then I don't know, not my field of expertise, but it is curious the Alabama legislature would be considering such an issue. Congressman, we got you now. I guess we'll be checking in the meantime. 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program from 1819 News, Ray Mellick will be with us. We'll talk to him. A gubernatorial race, Tim James talking a lot about what's going on in the Alabama legislature. A lot of people think if Governor Ivey is going to have a runoff opponent, it will be Tim James. Here's what I don't understand, ladies and gentlemen. This Numeracy Act bill brought by State Senator Arthur Orr. And a lot of people say, it's a backdoor to Common Core. Members of the legislature, others just say, what do we need to do to convince you? This is nothing of the sort. And it keeps going back and forth. I think we got to have a guest on Monday, a former school board member, that will walk us through whether or not this is a her opinion, I guess, is a whether it's a Common Core or not. But what we're doing here, I don't know, but my sense of things is there's a conflation here of standards and Common Core. So be that. That's how it goes. Congressman, we got you now.
I am here.
Hey, Congressman Robert Adler-Holt, ladies and gentlemen, join us here on the program. Congressman, thanks for making time for us. We always appreciate it. Let's kick it off here. President Zelensky spoke to you guys in an address to Congress. I want to get your reaction to that. What did you?
Yeah, no, it was a very, I think, emotional speech that he brought, very passionate, which I was fully expecting because he is very good at articulating what is going on in Ukraine. And so I think he hit on the top, the hot buttons of what he needs. Of course, his request was number one, as I know your listeners probably know, is to shut down the airspace above Ukraine. And then he said, give me the equipment, the jets, and to fight. And I thought he was very. He led into talking about Martin Luther King and I Have a Dream, and he knew we were all familiar with that phrase. And he said, I have a need, and so it was very just really moving. And I think he's probably moved the needle to put pressure on Congress and to do more, or to really put pressure on Biden to do more. I mean, obviously, Jeff, you know, and I know that we don't want to get in a third world war, but at the same time, we don't want to leave the Ukrainian people helpless. And so it's a very delicate situation. But I think that we have to stand up to Putin. We can't just let him threaten, and then, just take over the world. So, I think we've got to make sure we stand with strength, and I think that strength is the only thing that Putin listens to.
Congressman, just how far should we go here? Should we have made the deal with the Poles, with the MiGs for the swap for the, I guess it was F-16s? Should the Biden administration have done more there? Obviously, they think it would have been provocative, and it could have led to that escalation, but it seems like we're already doing so much. Why would this be any different?
No, I think you're right. I was hoping that we would, do the trade with Poland, as you mentioned. I thought that would have been a good thing to do. Now, obviously, there may be some information that I'm not aware of that the president has that, and I'm always reluctant to be too critical of any president, even though Biden is not a president I usually agree on a whole lot of things. But obviously, you have to think through these things. But at the same time, I would say that Putin, my question to the administration is, what if he goes into, another country, Moldova or one of the, or Georgia or the country of Georgia, which is nearby, at what point do you say enough is enough? And that's really, I think, the question we're having to deal with. And, he could threaten and say, we're going to get into nuclear war if you do this or that. But, if he's going to take over the world, it's just a very complex situation. And I, since I've been in Washington, I don't think I've seen the makeup of what we're seeing right now. And it's very tenuous over there. I happened to be over in Eastern Europe when the invasion occurred. I had been over in Lithuania meeting with some with the prime minister and with the president of Lithuania. They are very concerned. They are one of the, if not the first, one of the first breakaways from the Soviet empire back in the early 90s. And they are right next door to Belarus, right next door to, they border Russia and Kaliningrad. And so they're right there on the line as well. So It's a lot of those Eastern European countries are very nervous.
The fear that this could spill over and be World War III, I guess the dilemma here is, and I'm kind of interested to hear your take on this, that do you try to stop Putin now? Or do you you just kind of wait and see, and then and hope it doesn't escalate any further, and you can contain it. Or you know, what do you do? That seems to be kind of a dilemma there.
Yeah, and again, that's why it's so tough. I mean, my first inclination is let's get the Ukrainians everything they need. Oh, and quite honestly, I think the mistake was we didn't get that to them sooner. They wanted help long ago, and the administration did not really step up to the plate when we should have. We'd had them armed to the hilt. Then I think Putin would have thought twice about before going in. So I think that was really where the mistake occurred, and from the beginning. But again, this is one of those situations where I think that Putin would have only reconsidered what he was doing because of his because he would be afraid. And I think that Biden has shown weakness, I think that Putin has played upon that.
Joined by Congressman Robert Adderholt of the 4th Congressional District here in Alabama on the program. Meanwhile, I guess this is a pivotal moment. That this may be, I believe it's one of your colleagues up on the Hill said this, it's kind of like a scout team situation for China. China's watching what's going on in Ukraine and how the U.S. and other, I would assume, world powers are reacting. And they are, they're taking notes, and they could, use that as a basis for whether or not they go and try to take Taiwan again.
That is the thing that I think that they're watching very closely. And I think that they're watching. And I think the world, not only the United States, but the world has rallied around Ukraine in a way that I don't think that Russia anticipated. And then, therefore, I think that China is getting a message that, hey, we might ought to be careful as well. But you can't take that for granted. So that's why I think we've got to do everything we can to help Taiwan to make sure that they're not overrun by China either.
And is it one of these situations, do you think, where we maybe we learn from Ukraine and make sure that the Taiwanese have what they need to at least defend themselves in the event of something similar, that we could be more prepared for that and learn from what happened in Ukraine?
Yes, exactly. That we hope that's the lesson that we're learning the lesson. But I'm still hopeful for Ukraine. I think Ukraine can still come out of this as a victor. I think they've got some hard days ahead of them. But I think there's so much pressure right now on Russia and on Putin. And let me, and I always like to say, because this is Putin's war. I know there's a lot of, the Russian people are caught, but really in the middle of all this, because even the Russians that are over there, that I think there's a lot of them that would be more outspoken against Putin, but obviously because of the way that he runs that country, they are, you end up being poisoned or come up missing or whatever. And, so I think a lot of the Russian people are not able to speak out like they normally would. So this is all wrapped around Putin, and it's just very unfortunate to see him go to this level, especially the invading of a country like Ukraine. I've had the privilege to over the years to travel to Ukraine, and matter of fact, I got a chance to speak at a prayer breakfast they had over there a few years ago. Great to see that a country that was the former Soviet Republic, where the Bible was not allowed in under Soviet days, are now, I was there speaking at a prayer breakfast very openly right in Kyiv. So it's, there's a lot of kinship between the Alabama and Ukraine, because Alabama, I think, has sent a lot of mission trips over there from churches, and there's been a lot of adoptions from Ukraine into Alabama. So we've got quite a few Ukrainians that are living in Alabama now.
Last question, wrapping up on this. I know you're tight on time, but the energy prices, particularly price of gasoline, some of it's inflationary, one would assume, but some of it's kind of in this crunch situation we are because of Russia, because of sanctions. Looking at this problem, what What can Congress do? We're going to have to wait until Republicans get control to get some kind of movement back in the direction of energy independence in America?
Well, I'm afraid we will, just because, I mean, unless the president does, you know, changes his mind. I mean, now he'll say that you know, you can't do anything at this point, but you can do things. You can start opening up and doing more drilling, and that's going to take the pressure off of where we're seeing the prices escalate right now. So I think there's a lot of things you could do. Get rid of a lot of this red tape so people can start drilling very quickly. I mean, it's not going to be overnight, but this is not a short-term just a short-term. This is going to end up being, I think, for months to come. So, you know, I think Biden is correct when his administration says that, you know, it's not going to change something overnight. No, it's not going to change overnight, but it's going to change in the weeks to come and in the months to come. And so 6 months from now, we're still under the same policies under the administration. Then you're going to have, you know, then you have escalating gas prices. So I think Biden, you know, quite honestly, I sort of give him the benefit of the doubt. I think it was left up to his own. I think he'd probably be a little bit more negotiable on this. But, you know, he is surrounded by so many people on the left that are so, you know, leftist on the environmental issues that, you know, they would rather pay high gas prices than do any kind of drilling or get rid of any regulation so we can have lower gas prices. And that doesn't mean that you don't, you want to protect, you know, we don't want to run roughshod over environment. I mean, I think there's a way that you can do both. You can protect the environment, but you can also, you know, make some common sense decisions as far as how to move forward as far as drilling.
Congressman, you're always very kind to make time for us, and we appreciate it, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Well, good to be with you, Jeff, and I always look forward to it, and hope all is well down in your part of the world.
It is. Congressman Robert Adderholt there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. Because Music Row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5, 26 minutes after the hour on this abbreviated Jeff Porch Show here on FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. We still got a little time left. You want to work in a text message or two. Everybody except for Grant. Grant, you remain banned. It is Jeff Porristan, as it's affectionately being called, not the Free Republic or whatever, the Anarchic Republic of Sullivan land or whatever. But anyway, everyone else, welcome to participate. Even Ricky. We have lifted the ban on Ricky. 251-343-0106. Still to come in the next segment, we'll hear from 1819 News is Ray Mellick, my colleague there and editor here. I am, by the way, in Birmingham. We'll be speaking to Herschel Walker, running for United States Senate, and Tommy Tuberville this afternoon, so kind of on assignment, if you will. But I assure you the weather is no better here than it is down y'all's way in South Alabama, and just kind of a nasty situation if you're out and about. Do take the proper precautions. Let's see here. Dan writes, I have an 18-year-old daughter from Ukraine, and she has been on a mission trip back to Kharkiv last year with a group from Alabama. You hear a lot about that. Congressman Adderholt just mentioned that there are a lot of mission trips to Ukraine. And I suppose it was a place that really suffered under the Soviet Union. You just didn't have religious freedom. That was one of the knocks on communism. Now, you're listening to like Billy Graham and the way he would talk about the Soviet Union. You can listen to his old sermons on satellite radio, and I do that sometimes. And What they wanted to do in this old Soviet Union was make the they wanted the state to be the religion. They wanted the state to be the religion, and you didn't have God, you didn't have church, and you kind of wonder if that's the way some on the left see things in America, that they don't. They want your higher power to be government. They don't want your higher power to be that kooky Old Testament stuff, right? Whatever. They think that you need to look toward government instead of, any religion. I guess unless it's some kind of protected class or something. But in Ukraine, as far as that goes, when Ukraine broke away from the Soviet Union, they had to start all over, essentially. And then you had to find... places where you could grow the church and bring religion back to a place where it had been taken away. Anyway, let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us. Well, what's left of this Friday morning broadcast coming up in about a half hour. Auburn basketball taking on Jacksonville State in the NCAA tournament. Going to want to stick around for that. Monday on the program, give you a little teaser real quick. We got Dale Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News, our regular Monday guest, and probably some other guests to be named later. As I mentioned, we're going to do more with the whole Numeracy Act debate and just what exactly is going on there. Is it Common Core? Is it not? I hear conflicting things, but I'll try to get some, so-called experts on to discuss that piece of legislation. $92 million, so it's no small chunk of change at all. So please make sure you tune in on Monday for that. Also, taking your text, 251-343-0106, if you want to weigh in on anything we are discussing. Here, joining us here in person, first time we've done this, I think, in person, my new colleague at 1819 News, 1819news.com, ladies and gentlemen, I encourage everybody to go check it out, Editor-Chief Ray Melick. Ray, good morning. How are you?
Good, Jeff. Yeah, it is a little odd to be here face-to-face as opposed to on the phone, which is the normal routine. And I hate that you're in Birmingham. I'd rather be down in Mobile in that area at the coast talking to you, but we're glad you're up here.
Well, it's just as rainy down there as it is up here, but I don't know. It's good to get to Birmingham on occasion for me. So, but certainly you got to get down our way soon. A bunch of different things going on here. I guess the legislature's in session, and the way that goes, I guess you better hold on to your wallets or whatever. A lot of different ideas going on here. The one that really seems to have gotten a lot of movement lately is gambling. A couple of competing gambling bills, one in the House, it's just lottery, and then one in the Senate. A friend of the program, Greg Albritton, is the whole everything.
Yeah.
You've been watching this since 1999, and Don Siegelman, and they beat it then, and it just seems to linger and linger and linger and linger. We're going to be talking about this again next year, right?
Yeah, you know, it really is, and that's one of the things. It's kind of like a union voter to plant, where they can get beat, but they're not going away. You know,
right.
You can't kill them. I think the gambling argument is the same. Of course, there hasn't been a vote since the Siegelman vote way back then, and that was soundly defeated, and maybe the state's changed. Some of the polls indicate there is some different attitude about gambling, and particularly lottery, for the state. But it almost is like they can't get out of each other's way down at Montgomery. The House says, well, we'll do lottery. But the Senate's like, no, we want full gaming or gambling or whatever you want to call it. And then they can't reach a compromise. And then I know that Senator Albritton, they shot down his bill. And quite frankly, I know the speaker down there, or not the speaker, McCutcheon. Is McCutcheon speaker?
McCutcheon,
that's right, yeah. I believe this is right, and I may be speaking out of school here, expected him to come up with an alternative, and then all Britain didn't. And so they're all sort of like in limbo down there, it sounds like, as of when they broke yesterday. We'll see what, and then they're going on break, and even if they do come back with something, I don't think they've got time to reach any sort of agreeable passage of something that the House and the Senate could agree on to put on the ballot for November.
I tell you what the fascinating thing is about this whole saga, and that's what it is. It's a saga. This is the one thing that really highlights the whole dynamic in the Alabama legislature. Just doesn't seem to be much of a working relationship between the House and the Senate. And they really wanted this. Look at how they approached the gas tax, Rebuild Alabama in 2019. If the legislature and the governor really, really, really deep down wanted something, they would approach things like that. I'm convinced a lot of powers that be, let's say, are just kind of we'll pay lip service to it, or we'll even file a bill, but it's not really something we're going to make a priority.
Right. I do think, and I'm having worked with Congress, the federal in Washington D.C., I do know that there is work between senators and House representatives on bills that they, want to see really pass and make sure the language and everything is something that both houses would find acceptable, or at least the party in both houses would find acceptable. And they don't seem to do that in Montgomery, though. It's almost like the Senate says, well, we're going to do this regardless of whatever the folks down in the House might want to do. And the House almost has the attitude of, well, we're better than you. We're going to do this. And, then you don't go along with us. Then everybody takes their own ball and goes home, and nothing gets done. And sometimes that works in our favor. But it is frustrating if you see a bill that you particularly think is a good bill, it's something that would help people, and they just can't seem to play nice. And again, to me, if I'm introducing a piece of legislature in one house, say the House, I would want to go to somebody in the Senate and say, hey, how does this read to you guys? What do you think? Let's get language that may be acceptable to all of us before we try to go too far down this road.
Well, it's kind of a silly season, right? It's election year. A lot of these guys don't have opponents, but they're still kind of going through the motions and they're running campaigns. But a lot of the legislation, a lot of the bills are just fulfilling some of these campaign promises made back in 2018, the last time they ran. And, here we are at the last minute and trying to get it through, it seems like.
And I do think part of it is trying to play both ends against the middle. Let's just do gambling specifically.
Right.
So how do I act like, yeah, I really do want to consider gambling, but at the same time, a lot of my people are against it, so I can't do anything that makes them mad, but I also don't want to lose the support from the pro-gambling people. So how do I walk this line to act like, oh, man, I tried to get it done, but we just ran out of time.
It's like that on everything. You know?
And meanwhile, I'll tell you the bill that really – then they're talking about a bill to ban wakeboarding. This obscure thing that I forgot.
Well, it's wake surfing.
Wake surfing.
This is a fascinating thing going on in the legislature. There's a couple of senators, Jabba Wagner, up here locally, Garland Gudger, good friend of the program up in Coleman. They have interest on Smith. Obviously, Smith Lake's in Gudger's district.
Yep.
I think Senator Wagner has a lake house there. On the other side of this issue is Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth is very much against the whole wake surfing idea. Is it really in the state legislature's business to deal with all of this or whatever? But it's kind of fascinating how this they deviate from the big weighty issues to that.
That's really my point. I mean, I have a place on Lay Lake, and I understand. I know, particularly on a lot of the lakes, the wake damages your shoreline, and that's a concern to property owners. I get that. I really think it ought to be left up to whoever manages the lake to determine what they want to have there or not have there. But it just, with school choice, with the gambling bill, with, talk about grocery tax repeal.
And it's wake surfing.
And then all of a sudden I go, wake surfing?
Right.
That's what we're talking about now? That's really kind of the picture of what
And it's done. It's not even it's not low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, we all agree this whatever is bad. Let's do something about it. Voice vote it through, get the governor to sign it. it's controversial. So it's like there's going to be debate and, you know, potentially a filibuster or whatever. And if it's that heavy of a lift, and why, like you said, why not dedicate time to all these education issues? That's the biggest thing the state government does, apparently, is the education trust fund. We are 52nd out of 50. Keep saying that over and over again until I'm blue in the face. And but we're going to find time for lake surfing, I suppose.
And I was spoke to the Leeds Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and it's interesting how many people, hey, is there a chance on a repeal on the gas tax? Is there a chance on a grocery tax review? I mean, people that spend money out of their pockets, those are the things they're looking for. And they even say short-term relief, just something to get us through the – but the governor the other day, of course, on the gas tax said, oh, heck no, we're not doing this. This is Joe Biden's fault. It's got nothing to do with us here in Alabama.
I tell you what, Ray, I think the whole grocery tax thing is kind of a fascinating – it kind of tells you what you need to know about the Alabama legislature. We are this ruby red state that seems like one that should have been put to rest in 2011 right away, right? That now we're, for the first time since Reconstruction, Republicans have it. It is a Republican state, and you have all the offices from all the way from governor down to state auditor. It's all the justices on the court. Everything is Republican. And this continues to elude the legislature, that we still have this kind of regressive tax that is against conservative orthodoxy.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than just the grocery tax. It's school choice. It's all of these conservative ideas. And look, I'm ambivalent on a lot of these issues, but just kind of looking at it, that none of this stuff, none of these Republicans are really making any of these conservative ideas a priority.
Yeah, no, I agree, and that's what's frustrating, I think, for a lot of folks from that side that thought there would be a real change in government. But I do remind people, it's not as many as it used to be, but in 2010, a lot of those folks that were Republicans had been Democrats. And you know, I'm Richard Shelby, Tim James' dad was a Democrat governor and a Republican.
And a Republican,
so
yeah.
You saw this shift. Well, they didn't really change who they are. They just changed the letter by their name. And I do think while they were conservative Democrats at the Democratic Party, the Democrat Party left, so they came into Republican, they didn't lose a lot of their former tendencies. And I think that's something that's been slow to elect a younger generation of sort of true Republicans that are conservatives that were brought up that way. But and it's just a theory. I actually asked a couple of history professors that teach here at the universities in Alabama, hey, have you got any thought about this? And nobody, just like crickets, nobody really thought about that before. But to me, that seems like a really interesting topic of the switch from Democrats to Republicans.
It may be generational, right? And yeah. It may take a little time. The aesthetics have changed overnight because that's what's politically expedient. But it may take time for some of these former Democrats, if you will, to kind of work themselves into retirement, and then you bring it becomes a more Republican.
Jeb Wagner, who I love, I've known forever, but he's going to live forever. I mean, he's going to be there.
He's been in the legislature since the 60s.
I know. I mean, bless his heart, and he's in great shape, and, you know, I mean,
he's sharp as he's ever been.
I know. I mean, I like I said, I've known the guy, I like the guy a lot, but it just amazes me how he just keeps on going.
Yeah, I mean, he's the exception to the rule. I tell you, the one thing that probably I wrote this story for you guys last night. Richard Shelby, not exactly conservative incorporated at
example.
All. $548 million in earmarks, by far almost double what second place Lindsey Graham was able to bring back to South Carolina. I get it. He's on his way out. He is a former Democrat. I remember when he switched after the 94 revolution. After that, it was like 95 when he comes in, and now he's a Republican. But he certainly is not. He is not a guy that you would think would be an Alabama. He's sort of an Old South, Trent Lott style, bring home the bacon type of a Republican. And I think those are becoming. This is a great example there with his departure. That's kind of going to be the trend now, right?
Yeah, and that's also an interesting part of the Senate race. Is we were going to have, I looked this up last night, with Tommy Tuberville and whoever wins, it's going to be Republican. It's probably going to be either Mo Brooks, Katie Britt, or Mike Durant.
Right.
But this will be the least seniority this state has had since 1978 when I forgot who it was, but anyway, there was a, James Allen had died and a guy that came in to replace him at the same time. The other side, I want to say maybe Howell Heflin was elected. And that's the last time we had two such inexperienced people representing us, which ultimately means less money coming to the state because seniority is where you get the power. And Richard Shelby, it's an anti-conservative notion, but he has brought, as you pointed out in your article today, enormous amounts of money back to the state.
Here's what I this as a conservative bothers me, and I talk about it all the time on this show, that we have to profess to be grateful for the St. Richard Shelby and everything he's brought back to the state. And look, I will acknowledge this. Birmingham is what it is today because of Richard Shelby. I mean, it would have been a hollowed out Rust Belt town if not for UAB and healthcare. Huntsville certainly has benefited. But I feel like when we start going into this sort of hero worship mode with Richard Shelby, that you're forgetting, are you a conservative at all? Do you really think that, you know, that it's virtuous to talk about this in this way and not look at ways to maybe disentangle ourselves from the federal government and that dependency?
Well, four words, $30 trillion debt. I mean, a lot of that is because Richard Shelby and others like him are so anxious to bring so much federal money back to their states to do good in those states, when a true conservative would be going, hey, hold off, guys. We don't need to be spending this much federal money. Let's cut back on this stuff where we can. But
it's so much more than that. It suggests that as Alabamians, we are relying upon the government. If it not for the federal government, you heard these people say this all the time, it drives me crazy, we'd be a third world country if not for Richard Shelby. And I, you know, Richard Shelby said, I will acknowledge what he has done, but that's not to say something else would not have come along, right? Something different. We got to kind of look at this big picture and not just assume that, as you know, that if not for Richard Shelby, then Alabama would be struggling. That I think we would have figured something out, right?
A banana republic of some kind.
Yeah,
I don't know what that. Yeah, I'm with you, because I do think the infrastructure, the businesses coming here. Yes, he helped get a lot of that here, but he didn't have to continually fund it. That's the point that I think is stressable here, is that we have entrepreneurs, we have business people, we have smart people that would have developed and gotten this done along the way. And again, as we've said oftentimes, for 10 years, the state's sitting on enormous amounts of money, and this goes before the CARES Act and this recent dump of federal benefits to the state. The state's doing great in money. Let's quit taking it from the people then. Let's do something to give people a break. And yes, I think Richard Shelby, as much as I appreciate what he's done, is also symptomatic of that $30 trillion in debt. Are senators like him that say, we got to cut the budget. Oh, but not for my people.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to get a quick break in here, and we'll pick it up on the other side with just a few more moments remaining. We're joined in, studio, if you will, by Ray Mellick, 1819 News. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can.
Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. I still love rock and roll.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Just a few moments remaining. Coming up here in just a few minutes, we got Auburn basketball, Auburn versus Jacksonville State, the NCAA tournament. Coming up Monday on the program, Dale Jackson and some guests to be named later. Make sure you tune in for that. But while we got him here for a few more minutes, Ray Mellick, 1819 News Editor-in-Chief. Ray, how is the 1819 experience going? Can you give us some progress report?
Yeah, you know, and people can find us on the internet at 1819news.com, and the podcasts are available in YouTube and Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. It's 1819, the podcast, Alabama Unfiltered, and This Alabama Live for the three. We're at a point now, we're not even 6 months old, but I feel like we've got great content I'm proud of. people like yourself that are now contributing and writing for us. It gives us great coverage of Alabama politics, as well as more than that. We're also just getting into issues and stories that are out there. And it's been very rewarding. And everywhere I go now, even down in Montgomery, people are coming up and either saying, hey, I read your stuff every day, or they don't like what we're writing. But either way, that means they're paying attention. And of course, you're the last addition to that. That's kind of that missing piece. I felt like that it kind of rounds out the political coverage, and appreciate you being our political editor, as we say. But that's,
you're very kind to say that. But I am kind of, just in my short time here, seeing it, you know, more people becoming aware of it. And it is, that's always gratifying, right? Yeah. Even when they tell you they don't like what they're reading or whatever. But there is a place for this. I still think there's a lot of good journalists in this state and a lot of good outlets, but there is still kind of a deficiency in a lot of areas in reporting what's going on, at least with public affairs.
Well, and I don't want to knock any other outlets. Obviously, I think there's a need, or we wouldn't have created this one. But I will say, there was a time 10, 15 years ago when Montgomery, the legislature, was covered by 10 to 15 reporters every day.
Right.
Now it's down to just a handful. And we're the only outlet that has two reporters down there full time, with Brandon Mosley and Craig Monger. And I think that's part of holding these guys accountable. And I think we're seeing results. The story we did on AEA Monday to Republican candidates, and then Senator Garrett, the head of the chairman of the Education Department, gave his AEA money back. I don't think he'd have done that if it hadn't been pointed out, the discrepancy in what's been going on.
Ray, we got to leave it there, but you're very kind to make time for us. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Good to always see you, Jeff.
And we'll have him on Tuesdays. This is a regular day, but we moved it to Friday because I was up here. Anyway, guys, I got to get out of here. It has been a pleasure. I will try to do better again on Monday. Sorry, Phyllis, forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.